BBC headlines take us up to 4 minutes past 8 o'clock here at Community Radio, listener supported KGNU. Good morning and happy new year. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear about agriculture in Colorado and about a group in the southern part of the state that's trying to recruit the next generation of farmers. After that, we'll continue our series, The Brink. Those are stories looking at economic and social justice issues. It's in partnership with graduate students in the Environmental Studies program at CU Boulder. Today, we're going to hear about climate refugees. With the new legislative session just days away, we'll revisit a commentary from the League of Women Voters of Boulder County on how a bill becomes law. Then we'll hear from the improv poet Amy from the Pearl Street Mall in Boulder, who has written a poem for the new year as we greet 2019. The comment line will take us to the bottom of the hour. Then after headlines from the BBC, it's time for science. And today we'll bring you BBC's Science in Action. At 9 o'clock, it's Alan Watts running out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. The new year brings some changes to Colorado law, including an increased minimum wage for workers and full-strength beer now being sold in grocery stores. The minimum hourly wage in the state has increased 90 cents an hour to $11.10 effective today. And starting at 8 o'clock this morning, grocery stores, which were previously restricted to selling 3-2 beer, are now allowed to sell full-strength beer, and their liquor licenses have automatically been updated by the state. Other changes include a change to driver's license applications. Colorado residents who can't prove that they're in the country legally can now use a social security number to get a driver's license. Previously, they had to use an individual taxpayer identification number to get their license. This process has led to some delays at the DMV. White supremacy signs have been posted in several Front Range cities over the last 2 weeks. The Greeley Tribune reports that many of the signs were taped to poles in downtown Greeley and were torn down. The signs displayed a white family opening presents around a Christmas tree and read, "Merry Christmas from Identity Europa." The Southern Poverty Law Center has identified Identity Europa as a white nationalist hate group. Similar signs were seen in Fort Collins, Arvada and Wheat Ridge. The Denver Post reports that the signs were part of a nationwide campaign. The government shutdown is impacting hundreds of Coloradoans. Nearly 200 federal workers in Colorado have applied for unemployment. Several state nonprofits are saying that they're providing support. Who provide support for low-income families say that they're also hearing from many federal workers who are struggling amidst the shutdown. Some federal services in the state have also been impacted. Roads remain unplowed at the Rocky Mountain National Park, and the park technically remains open, but visitors' centres also remain closed. The annual polar plunge is scheduled to take place today at noon at the Boulder Reservoir. This event is in support of the American Cancer Society. It was first held in 1982. Registration for today's plunge begins at the Boulder Reservoir at 11 a.m. and the plunge itself happens at noon. And the participants will have polar conditions today. There's a forecast high of just about 19 degrees for the Front Range for this first day of 2019. But there will be a warming trend as we begin the new year. Temperatures tomorrow will increase and highs could get into the upper 30s. And we might even get into the low 50s under sunny skies by the end of the week. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. Facing a volatile market and a high cost of entry, the future of agriculture depends on young newcomers who are willing to take the risk. One group in southern Colorado is testing out a method of recruitment that directs inspiration through experience. KSJD's Daniel Reisel visited Lewis, Colorado to see the program at work.
At Fozzie's farm in the Four Corners, school is in session. Jay Loescher opens up class for the day with clear sunny skies overhead and Sleeping Ute Mountain to the southwest.
These two parts, kind of our top priority right now for this week in terms of our irrigation.
Loescher is with the Montezuma Land Conservancy, a nonprofit land trust established to protect farmland, recreational spots, and scenery in southwest Colorado. Just a couple years ago, when Fozzie's farm was donated to the conservancy, its 83 acres had nothing on it.
Literally a blank slate. There were no buildings here. There were no infrastructure in terms of utilities or anything like that.
Now, the farm's transformed into a hands-on learning space, complete with facilities, irrigation, and some wooden poles for hawks to keep an eye on the prairie dogs. It's the heart of a program to introduce young adults to agriculture.
To hopefully inspire them to want to protect it.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates the average age of a farmer at about 58 years old. That's partly due to the barriers of entry for beginners, like the cost of land and equipment, and gaining experience. What Loescher wants to do at Fozzie's farm is inspire a younger generation of farmers by tackling one of those barriers. When the classroom becomes the farmland, students get the opportunity to experience a life in agriculture regardless of their background. On an average day, they receive assignments in the morning, right after checking in.
I'll take field E, and whoever wants to come with me.
Loescher splits up the group to check on irrigation.
Terry, you want to take a group and check out field C? Again, we've just got water.
Terry Gregory also works at the farm with the students. She's walking around and troubleshooting the trickles of water, walking the teenagers through her process.
It just hasn't backed up enough to do anything yet.
With a background in agriculture, Gregory says the students remind her of herself at that age. They both understand that the dirt washes off at the end of the day, but the experience is something they build on.
This is not something that you take a shower and it goes away. This is the real deal. This is life. And us giving life back to the land.
Like many classrooms, the students at the conservancy also go on field trips. On one trip, a livestock auction, and on another was a visit to Burke Beef in Mancos, nestled in the valley by Mesa Verde National Park. Today was branding day.
That one might look more like an X.
Farm manager Dustin Stein held the branding iron, but it was the students who took turns in restraining the cows.
Yeah, so let's release this part first. There she is. Come on. Come on.
Stein is a former full-time carpenter. In his mid-20s, a passion for agriculture developed. Every day he came home from his job and just wanted to work on his garden a bit more. Not long after, he made the switch, now managing Burke Beef and giving tours to students.
I think it's meaningful for them to see somebody young that's been able to make a living in agriculture.
And the results are starting to show with this pilot class. One student, Hanley Frost, said that he had gone from a passive interest in agriculture to seriously considering a career in the field. Others, like Carolyn Ballard, haven't made up their mind but kept other lessons from the experiences.
Yeah, I didn't used to always have like a positive attitude, and I used to be super shy, and I've noticed that I'm not as shy anymore, not as much after like them taking us to all these places and meeting new people and having to interact. It's really brought me like a long ways.
For Loescher, students like Carolyn are marks of the inaugural class meeting his goal. It will take a few years before Loescher can follow up with former students that entered the workforce, but the program is already drawing attention as a method to recruit younger farmers. State legislators met students during visits, and Great Outdoors Colorado awarded 18 local groups, including the Conservancy, a shared $1.8 million grant supporting programs to get kids outside.
We're on the cutting edge, really, of solving that problem of those missing generations of farmers. And we want to preserve this, we want to protect this, we want to transform this so that farming isn't a dying profession. It's a thriving and growing and dynamic profession. That's our vision, really, is to flip that the current trends on their head.
A vision working to grow the next class of the American family farm. For Western Slope Resources Reporting, I'm Daniel Reisel.
This story is part of Western Slope Resources Reporting, a collaboration between KSJD and four other radio stations in rural Colorado, made possible with support from the Gates Family Foundation.
You've been hearing The Brink on KGNU. That's a radio storytelling project about what is needed to transition to a more just environment and society. And they tell stories of inequality, struggle and transformation. It's a project of Assistant Professor Dave Siplett's graduate course, Power, Justice and Climate Change. That's in the Environmental Studies program at CU Boulder, working in partnership with KGNU and the Just Transition Collaborative. Well, this morning, we're going to hear about climate refugees from students Hannah Beaker and Emily Bakula.
I asked the chair, you know what this is? It's a snowball. And that's just from outside here. So it's very, very cold out, very unseasonal. So here, Mr. President, catch this.
This is a senator of Oklahoma, James Einhoff, speaking at the Senate floor, snowball in hand, arguing against the existence of climate change. Like Senator Einhoff, many people share a similar view, that climate change is simply the weather getting warmer, but because we're not seeing sweltering conditions everywhere, it doesn't exist. But climate change is much more than that. The impacts are diverse in the way it manifests and disproportionate to the people it affects. We met with climate scientist Angie Pendergrass to learn more about climate change.
Climate is like a collection of states of weather. And it's kind of all of them, right? And so what global warming means is you're taking all of that collection of states and you're moving it in some direction. So you're moving it to a little bit warmer and you're moving it in a direction where the precipitation changes a little bit. But it doesn't mean that it'll never be cold. It definitely doesn't mean that there won't be any snow. And I mean, I think the other things about it are that it's not monotonic and it's not uniform in space. I mean, the warming is actually more or less, there's more warming almost everywhere, with some exceptions in parts of the ocean that are slower to respond if you just look at the next, you know, 50 to 100 years. If you look long enough out, warm's everywhere.
Now here are the two different narratives of climate change that we examined.
Heavy rainfall has lashed Nepal for the past 5 days. Several hundred people have been displaced to temporary shelters. This is the second round of flooding in the country since June.
The water level is barely 20 centimeters above the danger level. And that's enough water to destroy and flood hundreds of thousands of people's homes.
More than 1,200 people are believed to have died. It's thought to be the worst monsoon season in decades, with tens of thousands of people forced from their homes in India, Nepal, and Bangladesh.
First, we looked at Bangladesh, one of the many areas that will see a severe increase in precipitation due to climate change. In an area where monsoons already pose a threat, this can have devastating consequences. Angie Pendergrass helped explain why and how such events are occurring in these areas.
This kind of notion about the spatial pattern of precipitation change is that we expect like sort of an intensification of the spatial pattern that we already have, definitely with some modifications too. But the notion is, you know, kind of the storm tracks and the ITCZ or the Intertropical Convergence Zone, we expect those precipitating systems to end up with more precipitation on average.
A bit to the east, we witnessed South Africa facing the opposite problem. In October 2017, the mayor of Cape Town declared April 21st to be Day Zero, the day municipal water supply would completely run out. Since then, citywide efforts delayed Day Zero until 2019. We met with Nicole Reneker, a former resident of Cape Town, to learn more about South Africa's battle with droughts.
So they were down last year to my dad said 15 liters a day per person.
To put this into perspective, the average American uses roughly 300 to 375 liters of water per day.
So they're feeling that and they can't do the gardening, you know, stuff, your day-to-day things, buying water. It's expensive. And they were actually shipping water to Cape Town for the farmers and for people to buy water. And like tanks would come and you could go and fill up on water.
We asked Angie Pendergrass to clarify this trend.
And then this notion of the dry areas getting drier, a lot of those regions don't have very much precipitation to begin with. So some of them have some small decreases in precipitation. But the thing that's really overwhelming in those areas is that you get kind of more evaporation because warm air can hold more water vapor.
These are not isolated events and can happen all over the world, even in the U.S. It is critical to understand the adaptive capacities of countries that will be impacted by climate change the most. Countries such as South Africa and Bangladesh, where infrastructure may not be able to withstand intensified climates, and where money is so short that rebounding from climactic disasters such as tropical cyclones and water crises will be nearly impossible. In America and all over the world, the voices of disbelievers shadow the voices pleading for help. The people of South Africa and Bangladesh deserve to be heard and listened to. Understanding the magnitude of climate change and the people impacted by it empowers us to make decisions about how we move forward. We are all part of the same planet, and we must care for each other to ensure a safe world for generations to come.
And that story was produced by Hannah Beaker and Emily Bakula. They are graduate students in the Environmental Studies program at CU Boulder, working in collaboration with KGNU as part of the series The Brink. Well, with the next legislative session just days away, we thought it'd be a good time to revisit the commentary produced by the League of Women Voters of Boulder County on how a bill actually becomes law in the state of Colorado. Here is Anatomy of a Bill.
I am Jeanette Hillary with the League of Women Voters of Boulder County. We all know the saying, there ought to be a law, but how does it come about? How does a bill in the Colorado legislature become a law? We're going to start with a bill being introduced in the Colorado House. That means a representative is introducing it. It is introduced in the House, given a number, and first reading by the House clerk. The Speaker of the House refers it to a committee. The committee hears and votes on this bill. This is where the public can participate and attend. There will be testimony, and there may be amendments. The committee reports, and the bill is sent for second reading and a voice vote on the floor of the House. There may be more amendments, and there is debate on the floor. Again, the public can always be corresponding, either through email or phone calls, to their representatives, but they are not allowed public information at that point. Third reading and final passage may have more debate and the vote is recorded. If the bill passes, it moves to the Senate. The first reading in the Senate is by the Senate clerk, who introduces the bill, and it is referred to a committee by the Senate president. The committee hears and votes on the bill. Again, this is where the public can attend and give testimony or provide written testimony. The committee submits a report and sends the bill for second reading to the Senate floor, where more debate and amendments are possible. There is a voice vote. Third reading and final passage may have more debate, but the final vote is recorded. If the bill is the same version in each House, then it is sent to the governor. If the governor signs it, it becomes a law. If the governor fails to sign within 10 days during the session or within 30 days of the General Assembly adjourning, or it is vetoed, but the bill is repassed in both the House and the Senate by 2/3 vote of all members, it becomes a law. If amendments have been made to the bill in either House, it must go back to both houses to accept or reject them. If the first House accepts, then the bill goes to the governor for his signature. If the first House rejects amendments, then a conference committee composed of members from both houses is selected, and they attempt to iron out differences. If they reach agreement, it is sent to both houses to accept and then referred to the government. If no agreement is reached, the bill is considered dead. More information on the Colorado General Assembly, its bills and meeting schedules, can be accessed on their website, leg.colorado.gov. For information about the League of Women Voters of Boulder County, you can find us on Facebook or our website, lwvbc.com. www.nepal.org.
And the upcoming legislative session actually convenes early this year. It begins January 4th, so later this week. Well, Amy Marshak is the improv poet that you may have seen on the Pearl Street Mall or in Boulder or in Larimer Square in Denver. People give her a theme and she composes and performs a poem right there on the spot. Well, she came into the KGNU studios to compose a poem for New Year's Day.
A poem for the new year, 2019. We have the possibility here for a new year of so much joy and absolute cheer. We have the possibility to look at each other and see that, yes, we can live with joy and glee. We can live being kinder to each other, too. We can remember everyone deserves their needs being met in this year as it comes through. We can hold our hands out wide and say, yes, we are going to go on an amazing 2019 ride, a year of joy and happiness, too, a year where everyone sees a person as a human being and loves them through and through.
And that's Amy Marshak, the improv poet. You can catch her in Larimer Square or the Pearl Street Mall in Boulder, and find out more at improvpoet.com. It's 8:25 and a very happy new year to all of our listeners. And it's time now to hear from you, the listeners. Here is the comment line.
Hi, I'm listening to your show, New Year's Eve. This is some of the worst music I've ever heard. This is mostly New Year's Eve party music and it's some kind of dope head method music. You know, it's not like it has been the last couple years. Whoever thought this was a good set is an idiot.
Hi, I'm a Denver listener, and I happened to catch Joanne's show this morning, Monday the 25th, I think. I just wanted to say a terrific show, probably the best show I've heard all week. And as they say, I guess nobody does Christmas like a Jew. And I mean that as a compliment, along with Irving Berlin and other great Christmas contributors. This has definitely been the best show I've heard. And despite, I know, some rumors to the contrary, I still believe that Jesus and Bob Dylan were Jews. So, again, thanks very much. A great show.
Good evening, folks. This is Noah, and it's about 8:45 on Saturday night. A friend of mine from the Chicago area and I were sitting around and listening to the Deadhead Hour and all of a sudden lost the signal. And so I hope it's on your end and not on my radio's end. But whatever, I'll keep kind of checking in and seeing if I can't capture you guys again. And I really just adore that you continue to do the Deadhead Hour.
Hi, this is a message to all KGNU members that care about the station. There's an issue with begging for money and the begging for money attitude and the whole thing that happens when you do that. KGNU has now moved into this mode where it's always begging for money. The mini fund drive in July has expanded. Now we're getting hit with a cyber drive. And to me, this is wrong. We were able to do everything in two fund drives, spring and fall. And I think that we should contain it to two fund drives. This proliferation is like fracking of the membership base. And I don't like it. It's like listening to commercial TV, watching commercial television. That's what I'm getting now. KGNU is now feeling like corporate public radio. Please, let's put it back into two fund drives and the cyber drive, baloney. Thank you.
Hi, I'm calling about your recent re-airing of the Boulder Homeless Situation Report, which was excellent, by the way, and I'm really grateful for your local news efforts. I've been kind of stewing about this homeless situation for many, many years, and currently my 25-year-old son is living in his car in Longmont, And it just occurred to me after listening to a NPR piece about the clogged immigration courts that the courts are clogged by design, and homelessness is not just some random byproduct. It is also by design that we have an underclass of people, of disposable people, that keeps all of us on our toes and pedaling as fast as we can, to mix the metaphor, to continue to work in this capitalist system. It's by design that we have people living and dying on the street. And I just wanted to say that. And addressing it locally is always going to be hard when it's baked into the cake of how we do our society. Thank you.
And that is the comment line. You can call 303-447-9911 anytime and leave a message. And we air the comment line on Tuesday mornings. And a big thank you to everyone who gave during the Cyber Drive, which we wrapped up yesterday. And in fact, thank you to everybody who contributes to the station throughout the year.
Thank you for being part of our end-of-year Cyber Drive this year. KGNU is community-powered because of all of your participation and giving. We look forward to celebrating every new year with our community.